Today our sermon title is The Theology of Pruning. Pruning. Begin with a story I have permission to tell you from our Wednesday evening Bible study. A couple who have moved here to Oshawa and joined the choir recently have formerly lived in a beautiful area of Canada called British Columbia. And what was the name of the town? Penticton. Thank you, Joan. Penticton. And thank you for your beautiful solo this morning, Joan. Thank you, beautiful. And Joan. Penticton. And in their backyard, they had some beautiful cherry trees. An arborist was brought in because it was a lot of heavy work to try and trim the cherry trees. The arborist was doing his work through the day, and by the end of the day, they were shocked to find that there was very little left of the trees. They thought for sure they've killed the trees. Well, that was in the fall. In the spring, well, you can kind of guess what happened. There was so many blossoms and so many cherries, that it was just an explosion of color and light and fruit. So thank you for that story, and it fits in perfectly with the theology of pruning. Why am I talking about pruning, trimming, and so on this Palm Sunday? Well, in Jesus' triumphal entry that we have kind of recreated in our own little way here at Christ Church in our parade this morning, we are stepping into territory that you might call the theology of pruning, that Jesus is pruning their thinking about Jesus as king. He's pruning their thinking about Jesus as king. Let's look at this. From John's Gospel, chapter 12, verse 12. It says, "The next day, the crowd that had come to the festival," this is on page 93 if you're following along, "the next day, the crowd that had come to the festival heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem." Well, what is this next day? Today's the next day after Saturday. But if you read just a few verses before, you'll see that something momentous had happened, that Lazarus had been raised from the dead. He'd been dead for 4 days. And if you remember Sunday school, perhaps you learned the shortest verse in the Bible. Do you remember the shortest verse in the Bible? Jesus wept. And we kind of joke about that because it's the shortest verse in the Bible. Two words, Jesus wept. But it wasn't humorous at all. He was sad that his friend Lazarus was dead. After 4 days, he goes to the tomb, and what does he do? Calls for the stone to be removed, and he says, "Lazarus, come out." Lazarus came out. The next day, do you understand the context? The next day, the celebrity status of Jesus had shot through the roof. Now, they didn't have Instagram and Snapchat and Twitter, but there was something trending on the lips of the people of Jerusalem as they're doing their duty. They're walking in through the narrow streets of Jerusalem, and they're coming into Jerusalem because they have to pay their taxes to Gloria. No, pay their taxes to Rome. And they come to the annual worship service for the Passover, three festivals in one, Passover, unleavened bread, and the first fruits. They're doing their duty, they're coming up to Jerusalem, they're coming into the narrow streets, and what does Jesus do? He comes with his celebrity status, something that he has shunned all his 3 years of ministry. He shunned this. And what happens next? So they took branches of palm trees and went out to meet him. Well, they took whatever was handy to grab to celebrate this great celebrity who had just raised Lazarus from the dead. No one has done this before. Even the skeptics were coming out to see him. Even the non-religious people were interested in who this Jesus was that had raised somebody from the dead. Even the people who didn't usually go to church showed up that day for the parade to see this Jesus who had raised Lazarus from the dead, and they were shouting. Now, I like to think the rich kids had been to, you know, buying all the expensive things to wave, but the ordinary people would just grab whatever they could find, the cedar branches and the noisemakers and whatever they could find, the flutal flingers, and they grabbed the palm branches, and they were shouting, "Hosanna, Hosanna." Do you know what Hosanna means? Here's your something to know for today. Here's something trivia. Do you know this? It means, save us. Save us. Save us. What do they want to be saved from? You tell me. What do they want to be saved from? death? Yeah, perhaps. The enemy. Who is the enemy? Americans? Not the Americans. No. The Russians, the Koreans. It was the Romans at this point. But you know, they'd seen this story before. 160 years ago, Judas Maccabeus had ridden into town on a horse, and he said, I'm going to come and we're going to do a revolt. And he had some followers with him, and they actually were successful for 7 years in throwing off the Greco-Macedonians. So the Greeks were in charge of Jerusalem in those days, 160 years before. Now it's the Romans. Oh, here he is coming into town. This is the new king. We're excited. He's raised the dead. Maybe he's the one. And if you think back to chapter 10, Jesus calls himself, I am the good shepherd. And if you go back to chapter 9, a woman comes into a dinner party and she brings her expensive oil and she anoints Jesus' feet. And it was like the sunshine list of oil. You know how much a sunshine list is? It's $100,000 if you're lucky, right? That's how much, it was a year's wage. That's how much this oil cost that Mary, it was a different Mary, poured onto Jesus' feet. That's in chapter 9. So he allowed that to happen. He's the good shepherd. Maybe he's King David come back. They're excited. Of course he's the king. Isn't he? So where's the pruning, Mr. Greaves? Pastor Kit, where's the pruning here? Isn't that our theme? The pruning is in their thinking about the king. They're thinking, okay, we've got this history. Other kings have come into town to lead a revolution. We've got this prophecy. Hosanna, save us. They're saying the words of prophetic poetry. So history and prophecy, and he's raised some from the dead. We've got miracle. We've got history. We've got prophecy. He must be the king. The pruning comes in the next verse. Look at that. Hosanna, blessed is one who comes in the name of King of Israel. Verse 14. Some commentators want to add a word before the name that I'm about to tell you. They want to add the word but. Okay, so they're shouting, King of Israel. Some commentators want to say, but Jesus found a young donkey and sat on it. That's the beginning of the pruning. A donkey? You got to be kidding me. Why not on like a MK-47 tank or something? Why not, you know, some kind of, why not a camel that at least is going to spit at the enemy? Or why not on like a proud horse, a steed, who's going to show to demonstrate, and his followers would be following him with great power and aggression? What do his followers have in their hands?
Palm branches.
What? This is they pruned the palm trees. It's kind of a beginning to the pruning that Jesus is doing in a very gentle and, if you will, subtle way, a pruning of their thinking that the kind of king he was going to be and that he is and that he will be and that I hope he is for you is a gentle, loving, nurturing, powerful king because of his humility. Now, I mentioned the story of the cherry trees. Remember that at the very beginning? The cherry trees were aggressively pruned by the arborist. They looked like they were dead. There are other kinds of pruning. There's a kind of pruning called passive pruning. That's the kind of pruning that I do. It's like my office plant, you know, that sits on it's been there for a few months, and I always forget to water it. Passive pruning, it just, the branches and leaves, just the blossoms just fall off by themselves. And I forget to watch. So I'm a benign gardener. I don't know. I just don't remember to. So I'm just passively looking after this plant. It's looking after me, taking the sunshine in. Occasionally I remember to water it. Maybe you're like that kind of a gardener. I don't know. So there's aggressive pruning. There's passive pruning. And then there's the kind that we see here today in the theology of pruning that Jesus shows of pruning in their thinking about the kind of king that Jesus was. It's a gentle, loving pruning. Well, you and I know what's going to happen later in the week. I hope you will be here for Monday, Thursday, if you can come to be with us at 7:30. I'm going to wash a couple of representatives' feet to remind myself of whose minister I am in washing someone's feet. And then I'm going to invite anyone else to come forward to have their feet washed. Anyone. Because if we're learning to follow Jesus, we're learning to be humble servants of one another. Now, when I've done this in my 30 years of ministry, the people who come up to sit in the chairs at the front for the foot washing, when they take off their socks or short nylon things and shoes, those are the cleanest feet I've ever seen. We'll talk more about that on Monday, Thursday. And I hope you'll be with us on Good Friday morning at 11 o'clock, or perhaps sign up for the prayer vigil and enjoy some quiet sometime between 7 a.m. and 10:30 for the prayer vigil, and then 11 o'clock is our liturgy of Good Friday. I'm looking forward to that. And we'll talk more about that then. But on that day, what you will see with me is aggressive pruning. And sometimes in our life and in our society, whether it's in the Sudan with the starvation that's there, whether it's in Syria with the bombing that's going on there, whether it's in the Californian mudslides, whatever aggressive things that seem to be going on, it seems in our thinking that God lops things and people off. That God is punishing. I would like to suggest that the theology of pruning needs to happen in our own minds too. That God isn't seeking to punish indiscriminately, but that pruning is simply part of life. That people we love get sick. That people we love die. That things happen that are aggressive in nature that we seem to not have control over. That things happen passively that we just simply let happen that are part of the pruning that are difficult and painful as well. I'm not sure what my plant, my cactus, thinks of my lack of intention, but let me give you a little illustration. Do you know out in the sea, if you break a bottle, a glass bottle, a wine bottle, whatever it is, and over time the glass breaks up and washes on the shore, back and forth, the glass loses its sharp edges, and instead it's a multicolored collection of sea glass that actually you could take in your hand and hold as a beautiful collection of rainbow glass. I'd like to suggest that in our life, and sometimes in the church family life, we're a little like that. We kind of rub up against each other in sometimes passive ways, but in caring ways that demonstrates that we are more together than we would be separately. And then there's a loving, intentional, nurturing kind of pruning that takes place when we say things like, I feel like I'm not satisfied in my career where I am right now. I'm going to move locations. I'm going to take up my family and I'm going to go somewhere else because I feel called to do that. That's an intentional, and you're hoping that your family will be with you and do that. And it might be painful, but it might be part of the loving nurture of your growth or your family's growth. I remember my dad doing that. I was born in Sault Ste. Marie, and on purpose he moved away from there, moved down to Brooklyn where I grew up, Brooklyn, Ontario. And he did that on purpose for the goal of giving his family, his three kids, myself and my sister and brother, an opportunity to grow in a place that have more opportunities for learning, opportunities for service, opportunities and so on. I mention that particular story today because it's my sister's birthday today and I'm giving thanks for my sister. Elizabeth Taylor is her name. Elizabeth Taylor. She's turning, I won't say how old she is. It's her birthday today. So the intentional, nurturing kind of loving pruning, my wife and I also have a sponsor child. Maybe you have a sponsor child or foster. Maybe you've fostered a child. Maybe you have adopted a child. You're intentional about your loving nurture, and some things have to go when you do that. We couldn't do some other charities because we're supporting this girl and her family in Guatemala, right? There's a certain pruning that goes on because of that. So are you with me here understanding something of theology pruning? What Jesus was accomplishing wasn't just for the nation of Israel. It wasn't just for political suppression of the enemy. It was demonstrating to them and to us that the kind of king that Jesus was a king not just for this world, but for the world to come, a world that he represents, a world that we see in the confrontation between Pilate and himself as Jesus is arrested and interviewed, And Pilate says to him, "So, are you a king?" And Jesus says, "You say that I am a king. My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, he would have sent 10,000 legions of angels to defend me. But it's not." So we are a part of this world. We're part of this sort of nurturing pruning process, where there's aggressive, passive, or loving nurture in pruning. So my question to you is, what is God doing in your life? I would like to suggest that if the kind of pruning he's doing in your life is somewhat painful, that pruning comes, and listen to this, with a promise. The pruning comes with a promise. And I'm grateful for the promise. And what is the promise? You've been reading the meeting Jesus in John using those readings, or even from last Sunday, you might remember. Jesus said this, "Abide in me as I abide in you." In other words, he promised himself. He promised his presence with us. It doesn't mean that life isn't going to be without pruning, because pruning is going to happen. But it isn't that God is trying to punish us. God is trying to show us that in the realities of this world, there's a reality of that world that he makes intersect in our lives as we say yes to him and recognize his promise to be with us in the pruning. Are you with me? His promise to be with us in the pruning. Perhaps the fruit of our life will demonstrate itself in this life, and then perhaps in the life of Christ Church as we grow. We are growing. As we grow, as we mature, as we organically grow, as we intentionally grow, as we incarnationally grow, and maybe in numbers too. But growth is happening because people are learning to trust in him with all our heart. He's sometimes spectacular and it's a great parade, and Jesus, allow them to shout Hosanna. But he only did that so that he could teach them the kind of king that he was and he is, who promises to be with us in the pruning. Thanks be to God.